Hello, and welcome to the Tech CEO Essentials Podcast. We focus on the top areas that tech CEOs need to know. I'm your host, Tom Cooper, and this podcast is sponsored by my company, Bright Hill Group, where we believe that because people matter, we must lead them well. I have to say, today's topic is a tough one for most CEOs. What are the essentials a tech CEO needs to know about conflict, and what are some healthy ways to resolve it? Today, I've got the privilege of interviewing Laura Palmer from Bridgenosis. Laura obtained her law degree and public policy master's from the University of Chicago and is also a certified hypnotherapist. While practicing labor and employment law for 7 years, which includes a brief stint as a political appointee, she began to envision a future where conflict within and between organizations no longer limits a company's potential, but instead serves as an opportunity to create a new, empowering perspective to achieve greater success. Laura, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, one of the things that is the toughest, I think, for business leaders to solve is really dealing with conflict. And just today, I talked to the partnership team. They're dealing with a pretty big conflict with one of their partners. And one of my clients today talked to me about a challenge she's facing with a specific staff member. And I know this is really your key area. So what are your thoughts about conflict in general?
Well, in my business, I actually define conflict a little bit more broadly than some people may initially. Of course, it will include the obvious tension or conflict between people, but a conflict could also be just when you have a department that's stagnant. You've got conflict there. It's underlying conflict. Or maybe you have chronic hiring issues. So I want to just at least open it up to think in those broader terms. And
so it's more than... If I'm getting you right, what you're saying is it's more than just I'm having trouble with Joe and Joe's the problem. It's a little bit broader than that.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah. It could be any type of obstacle or issue that you're having involving people within an organization, even if it's not like an outright fight or a lawsuit.
Okay. So if you've got, I mean, I frequently will say things, if you've got people, you've got problems, because you're dealing with people can be a challenge. So let's talk a little bit about what kind of challenges you've seen with technology companies.
Well, I actually recently asked some of my technology CEOs what conflicts do they think they're facing the most. And the number one issue that they brought up is managing their relationship with the software developers and retaining them. As everyone listening on this call knows, and you know, with your experience, talented developers are highly coveted, and they're a crucial aspect of technology business. And it, actually, though, this fear of losing talent comes up in other fields as well, and I've dealt with this with some of my clients. So it's not just a technology issue, but it's a very common issue that keeps coming up.
So that's great. Now, when you talk about losing key people, do you have a story or an example you could share with us about a struggle that somebody's faced around that area?
Sure. I had a CEO of a company who had a very talented senior executive who was doing great work and was a true asset to the organization, got along with most of the people in the organization fine, but was difficult to work with in some of the cases. He was a little more cutthroat than collaborative with his own peers, with some of the other senior-level executives. And this tension was actually trickling down into their respective departments, and frankly, a lot of time and money was being wasted. And even though the CEO was typically a very strong leader, able to enforce boundaries, well-respected on most fronts, when it came to this particular employee, his fear of losing the employee changed his behavior towards the individual. And interestingly enough, in the session, we also uncovered that he was having a lot of stress-related issues, neck pain, back pain, anxiety, those types of things. And that was surfacing as well as a signal that this was definitely a conflict that was causing a lot of stress for him and for his organization.
Interesting. So he's got this performer who's a good performer, but the person is not I'm trying to think about grade school. You know, works well and plays well with others. You know, on the report card I had when I was in grade school, you know, that was like, did you get the check marks or the X? You know, so that he was not was not doing well with others. So along that front, how did you help move that forward?
Well, in the work that I do, essentially what I'm doing is I'm looking for what are the thought patterns that are underlying the conflicts. So essentially the way you want to think about it is limiting beliefs are what drive external conflict, and external conflict is what brings awareness of that limiting belief. So when someone comes to me with a problem like this, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for what are the thought patterns that are surfacing. And we can go more into that later, but I'll give you an example of what I found here was essentially the limiting belief that was driving all of this was the CEO's fear of failure. And it's always interesting to bring up fear of failure with CEOs because most CEOs handle fear of failure and perceived failures generally better than the average person. I mean, it's CEOs that will, or entrepreneurs in general, leaders that will stand up to create solutions when it seems like there's no way out. So this is an interesting topic, but it's better if you can just replace the fear and not have it all, have it at all, because the fear will come up. When stakes get higher, fear will come up and will be disabling for a CEO. And when a CEO typically would be wearing what I'd say the creative mind hat, where you're focusing on finding solutions and allowing for inspiration, you're visualizing your success, you're coming up with your vision, all those things, that's when you're in creative mode. But when a fear of failure comes up, as the stakes get higher, if you've got that kind of a fear playing beneath the surface, then it's going to disable the CEO and put them in more of a protective mode. They'll be anxious. They'll be looking for ways to protect as opposed to ways to create. And it can be very distracting in terms of being able to create success and expand beyond the situation that you're in.
So I think I'm understanding kind of conceptually where you're, where you are with that, but I'm having trouble with making the connection between you've got this staff person, this leader in the organization who's not performing well, but then you talked about the CEO actually having some beliefs that played into some of that problem. Isn't the issue the actual person who's causing the trouble, not the CEO himself?
Well, it's true that the person that's exhibiting behavior is probably driven by fear of failure as well, right? When we're not playing well with others, it's usually because we're afraid that we're not going to succeed at something. So clearly fear of failure is underneath his behavior. But if a CEO is afraid to lose a particular person because it's crucial talent to the organization, then what's driving that? What's driving that fear of losing? It's fear of failure. And if you can overcome that and you can start to trust yourself and move yourself into a space of confidence, then the way that you interact with that particular developer and is going to essentially create more of a balanced relationship. You'll be respected more, and there won't be this exhibiting behavior towards the developer that would drive him to get away with some of the things he's getting away with and throw the organization off balance, because essentially the CEO is making decisions not necessarily in favor of the company's big picture, but rather in order to placate this one individual. And they're not necessarily decisions that are good for the individual either. They're just fear-based.
Interesting. So
does that make sense?
I think it does. I think what you're saying is that because there's a belief that I've, whatever the belief is, I've got to have this, it's got to work this way, I've got to kowtow to this person's behavior even if I don't agree with it, because if I don't have this person, I'm going to be in trouble.
Right. And what I'm saying is that if you can clear out all of that fear and distractions, then you're going to be moving from a different space. You're going to be moving from that confident CEO space, and you're probably going to retain that developer better. In this particular situation, when we removed that limiting belief, the relationship changed. The developer actually had more respect for the CEO. And things were clearer on that top-level area. And interestingly enough, the senior leader's negative behavior towards the other managers changed, because he actually had that same fear of failure that I was just describing, right? And when the top leader cleared his, everybody underneath them felt more relaxed. And it's that subconscious relationship that we have with each other that matters the most. And when you've got a leader in charge who's very confident, who's focused on a vision, who's relaxed, who's joyful, who's inspired, then you're gonna see that trickling down to the others. And the developer moves into a space of more confidence and more creativity as well. So it cleared up those conflicts, which then trickled down into the departments. And the organization as a whole became more focused on their vision and their true priorities, instead of being distracted by that need to protect. And of course, his aches and pains went away, which is nice. It's hard to operate. It's hard to operate your organization if you're not feeling good. I do want to bring up one other point, though, around fear of failure, because there's always a little resistance when you bring something like that up. Another point that some of our listeners might relate to is that when that first surfaces, that realization that, oh, I've got a little fear of failure playing along here, it's so ingrained in most leaders that when it surfaces, oftentimes they'll defend it as a necessity. Hmm. And it's actually not. I mean, you can think right now, Tom, and our listeners can take a moment to think about situations where they've been successful and they've been energized, inspired, maybe even feel a little fire in your belly. You've got joy, and it's just different. Things are falling into place, and so you're really being motivated from the heart and inside, as opposed to being motivated because you have to do something or else you're going to have some negative consequence.
But okay,
so we really don't need that fear.
Well, and I want to just challenge you a little bit on that, because I've spoken with, I've worked with people who said, yeah, I've got this fear in me, but this is what drives me. This is what makes me successful. If I didn't have this, I would be worthless. And it sounds like you're saying you don't buy into that. You think that's not true.
I think that's another limiting belief. And the leaders that I've worked with where they had that initial type resistance, mm-hmm. once I get them thinking about times when they've learned something, it might even be becoming good at a sport. I had one client that just loves to ski and is super confident around skiing. Another client is just awesome at baseball. And these are examples of times when they just intuitively were able to succeed at something and they felt awesome doing it. And there wasn't any sense of fear around it. So it's definitely not necessary to create success. In fact, I'd say it disables success because it distracts you. And another way to think about this is think about examples, and I think most of our listeners, and I'm sure you can probably come up with an idea like this too, but let's move into this idea of the subconscious mind and that other place of inspiration that I was bringing up. Think of an example where you may have done something because it just seemed right. Your gut instinct or your intuition about something was very strong. You may have decided not to sign a contract, or you may have moved forward or gone down a path or created something that felt good, and you didn't know all the details of how it would work out, and it may not have even seemed logical, but it just felt very right. I think CEOs are very good at tapping into that part of themselves. Do you know what I'm relating? Can you think of examples?
Oh, sure.
Doing that? Yeah. Okay, and so on the flip side, can you think of examples where you have heard that little voice and it felt good, but then another voice came in and you had questions or doubts, you didn't really want to trust that voice, and you didn't take that advice, that internal advice that you got, and then you regretted it. And your response to the results of what you did was, oh, I knew it. I shouldn't have done that.
Hey,
can you relate to that too?
Oh, well, you bet.
Yeah.
You bet.
So limiting beliefs are actually what keep us from listening to that place of wisdom that's inside us. And we all have that place. We all have those limiting beliefs that will cause us to feel doubt. And the problem, though, is that once you get to a level of a CEO and you're creating an organization, when you don't listen and you make those judgment calls to ignore, it ends up costing a lot of money and wasting you a lot of time. So you want to get better at that. You want to figure out, okay, what are the things that keep me from listening and from trusting? And when we're clearing out limiting beliefs, we're essentially just replacing it to more confidence in your intuition around that topic. So if your subconscious is trained to think, you know, I need to have some sort of program playing that looks for fear, for failures and pitfalls and whatnot in order to avoid them, then you can replace that by saying, no, actually my subconscious mind can trust my intuition or my gut, whatever you want to call it, to look for that for me instead, because it's going to. So that way you're not always focused on it. You don't have an automatic program looking for it, but you can just trust yourself to know when you're going to need to take steps.
Well, you've covered a huge amount of ground there. I mean, I think it's about figuring out. I mean, you talked about your subconscious. You talked about programs that run, and being able to replace an existing program within your subconscious with something else. There's a whole lot there. We probably do a separate program on each one of those things. But I think it's really powerful. So it sounds to me like what you're saying is becoming more aware of those underlying thoughts and programs or drivers that you have, and then choosing a direction to go that is a different direction. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, essentially replacing those beliefs, and that's what I did in this particular example. I didn't personally do it. I held the space for the client to do it. We used some techniques that are very easy to communicate with the part of the mind that actually forms those beliefs, the subconscious part of the mind, and they're actually very easy. It's really just a matter of visualization and relaxing and moving into that space around your creative mind to communicate. And the techniques, there are many different ways to do it. The most popular one that I've been using is widely used and known in the sports world. A lot of athletes use visualization and hypnosis techniques. And all you're doing is just getting to a relaxed state and then communicating in positive metaphorical terms, creative terms that part of the brain understands, and then just offering suggestions to change it. And when I'm in a session with a client, I do the work to help them figure out what's the resistance, what are the beliefs that need to shift, so that when they do go into that visualization mode, we can also add in suggestions to address those particular beliefs and programs that may have been useful at an earlier time but are not useful now. And then it's always the client's choice to make the change, to shift their belief systems. But they always do because it's always positive. So
So
it's actually very easy to do.
do so and I think there's a whole lot there that you just covered, but I'm wondering, is there something that our listeners could do to help them become aware? So we talked about fear of failure, for example. Is there some way that our listeners could say, "Oh, let me examine that and see if that's a limiting belief that I have." How can we become more aware of a limiting belief we might have?
Well, one way to know that you have, there's a lot of ways I can answer this question. One very simple way to know that you have a limiting belief surfacing in the first place is that you've got these little conflicts that are external. And then what you want to do is bring awareness to how you feel. If you're feeling negative, then you're likely playing a song in the background that's not true. It's a limiting belief that isn't actually true, that conflicts with your gut and is causing some issues. And that's probably the greatest thing that you can do, is to start paying attention to how you feel, because when you're tuned into the part of you that just knows, that instinct that you often rely on, then you're not feeling negative. You're feeling neutral or joyful or blissful, anything but negative. So that's really the first sign. And sometimes if you don't know what the limiting belief is, in the short term, what you can do is you can actually just move into a relaxed state by, there's a lot of, I actually teach a lot of techniques that are very easy and quick that people can employ on their own. They're kind of hard to describe over the phone, though. But there are quick ways that you can relax. And then people have their own ways, in terms of just keeping your stress levels down. But if you can stop what you're doing and not move forward with any of your plans, not make decisions until you're in that space, and then do what you need to do to get in that space, that's what you do in the short term. And then long term, you want to examine, what are the themes here? What are the thought patterns that are happening outside of me? And then be honest with yourself. Okay, is this something that I believe somewhere? And it may just be some small part of you that has doubt. Most of my clients are not crippled by fear. Most of my clients are very successful, talented, confident, wonderful people that have just a little bit of doubt that surfaces. And it's just that little bit that can cause a lot of problems and waste a lot of money.
So now, one of the things that you had said to me another time we were talking is that organizations should use conflicts as opportunities to create more success. And I'll tell you, most of the folks that I know, when they think conflict, they're like, could you just not have any conflict with me and just do what I want and that'll solve the problem? But you're saying that actually conflict is an opportunity to create more success. What do you mean by that?
Well, because the conflict is what brings the awareness in the first place, because ultimately the limiting beliefs are driving the conflict, and the external conflict is bringing awareness to the limiting beliefs in the first place. So when you have this, when you have this opportunity to examine what's happening beneath the surface because you have a conflict, then you have a chance to figure out what needs to change on, you know, on your mind about your perspective.
So going back to going back to our example earlier, then you said that you had this executive and the challenge with a developer, and that there's a whole dynamic going on there. So can you unpack that with this idea that that conflict is an opportunity to create more success?
Well, if he had not had someone who was challenging, and if he had not had a situation where he could see tension in the department and whatnot, mm-hmm. then he probably wouldn't have realized that he had this limiting belief in the first place. And when you can at least bring yourself aware of that you have this limiting belief and then shift it, then you move into a space of being able to tap into your creative mind around your vision. So then you're focusing your mind on creating even more ideas. Your vision expands. It moves away from being distracted to creating even more solutions, to moving into a space with your organization that you wouldn't have done if you hadn't had some sort of external conflict to bring attention to some areas where you could expand your own mind. Does that make sense?
I think it does, but I think you've just brought up another kind of area to dig into, and that is, it sounds like what you're saying is that the value that the CEO brings to an organization has more to do with creativity than it does with competence in a specific technical discipline. That they're
absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, and maybe let me know if you disagree with this, but I think that when you have someone at the very top of the organization, their greatest value is being able to hold the space for excellence within their organization. And they're counting on lots of different people and ideas and talent to come together to create an organizational success in a very big picture. And the CEO is holding the vision for the entire organization. And that vision is a creation of everything that's in their mind and everything that's in their intuition, their gut, whatever you want to call it, that space that creates, that has the vision in the first place, that inspires people. That's the ultimate goal of a leader, and their true value is there. And because they're human, they have limiting beliefs. We all do. It's something that we naturally create, and I know we don't have time to go into how we do that, but we all do this in an earlier age, and they serve a purpose, but ultimately you want to update it just the way that you update software, right? And you want to bring your mind up to speed. And so your vision is going to have, it's going to be a combination of that wise part of you, that internal compass that we were talking about, and it's also going to have a little bit of that limiting belief perspective as well. And the more you can clear out the limiting belief perspective, the greater value you can create for your organization, because your vision then expands and it becomes more about that wise internal compass leading your company and holding the vision, and less about protecting and less about limiting the company. It's essentially your remote control for everybody else in the organization.
Oh, gosh. Now that I'm sure we could do a whole program on that, because who wouldn't like to have a remote control for everybody in the organization?
It's in your mind.
Well, so, you know, gosh, it's kind of mind-blowing. Just as I think about this idea that really the conflict, we start talking about conflict, we haven't talked about specifics about how to resolve conflict at all, and yet what you're saying is it's really driving us to go deeper into ourselves so that we can then leverage the creativity which has brought us the success we have to get us even to higher heights of success in the organization.
Right, and ultimately when you face conflicts from this perspective, you have fewer of them. So I'm not saying that you want to create conflict in order to have more success. I'm just saying that you're seeing external conflicts in your organization, they're not just pains in the butt. You know, when I practiced law, it was very obvious to me that the conflicts are emotional and they're painful and they waste time and money. And typically they're shoved off to the HR or to lawyers, and a lot of money is wasted on them.
Sure.
And what I'm trying to say is, that's all fine. You should have HR and lawyers involved, but you know, especially if they get elevated and whatnot. So I'm not demeaning that role at all. But if that's the only strategy that you have, and you're not addressing what's actually causing the conflicts, then you're missing the entire opportunity that is there to resolve them and to expand the organization and to move it forward. And so this approach of having a strategy to look at things more on a subconscious level and address where things are actually developing in the first place is an opportunity to save money. It's an opportunity to prevent conflict and to ultimately not have as much, so that you're not wasting as much money on all the other external resources. So I don't mean to say that you want to have more conflict in your organization. I guess what I mean to say is you've got to have more adequate strategies for dealing with it if you want to prevent it. And if you look at it as an opportunity to create, then create more success, then you're going to have more success in growing your organization in spite of the conflicts that may have developed, and also reducing them in the future.
That's really interesting and really powerful. I mean, I think about your example from earlier. You said as soon as the limiting belief is uncovered and the program is replaced with a newer program that's more accurate or less inaccurate, now you start to see my positioning, my posture toward my employees is different, and their response to me is different, and then we have different outcomes. And I think that's what you were talking about in that story, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely one angle of it. Absolutely. That's a good synopsis of it.
Wow. Well, we've covered a huge amount of ground, and I know that our listeners have really benefited in a tremendous way from this. For those of you who are interested in getting more information about this, Laura's generously offered a free ebook called Unlimiting Beliefs, and I'll post a link on the blog to that. And so really, Laura, what's the core of the ebook? Is it an expansion of these kinds of ideas we've talked about?
Yeah, it goes into more about how this is formed, and it gives some examples of other limiting beliefs that are common within organizations and how they're manifesting in organizations, and that direct link between thought and problems that cost a lot of money. And there are also some techniques in there as well. There's actually a 15-minute relaxation download that is included with it, a link to that, and you can bring to mind something that's causing you some stress or keeping you up at night, and turn that on and listen to it. And I'm hearing good results from people that when they listen to it, they feel better, they see things a little bit clearer. And so it's just a small sampling of how changing your mind around something can give you more access to that part of you that you need to create success within your organization.
Well, that sounds really great. Thank you so much for offering that. And folks, if you're looking for more information about Laura, check out bridgenosis.com, BRIDGENOSIS.com. Laura, thank you so much for being here today. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor to have this conversation with you and spend this time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, terrific. Well, for our listeners, join us next time for more Tech CEO Essentials. We've got other exciting topics coming up. We're going to talk about legal and accounting and more. It's going to be terrific. For Bright Hill Group, this is Tom Cooper signing off.